Hello, hello, and welcome to the Sleon Productions podcast, where we interview entrepreneurs, business owners, and authors. And today we have a returning guest. She's been on the show twice in the past, and now it's her third time today. Nancy E. Head. She is the author of The Broken Harp, her new book, which is a gripping middle grade novel that takes place in Ireland during World War II. The book explores a nation quietly divided, where questions of loyalty, courage, and morality aren't just political. They're deeply personal. Nancy, welcome to the Sleon Productions podcast.
Well, thank you so much for having me again. Nice to be here.
So can you tell us a little bit about the book and the background?
Well, when my husband retired as a meteorologist for the National Weather Service, we wanted to take a trip. And we couldn't afford to go to Italy, so we went to Scotland and Ireland. And on the boat from Scotland across to Ireland, we met a woman who was telling us about her life story, that she was a nurse from Ireland who worked. Her commute was the boat going across the channel between the two islands of the United Kingdom and Ireland and Northern Ireland there. And she was telling us that, you know, she was a nurse. She went back and forth. And I don't know how we got on the subject of World War II. But, of course, the tension between the Irish and the English. The English just having been ousted from Ireland up into Northern Ireland, I believe it was 1920. So a little bit less than 20 years before World War II starts. Ireland decides to be neutral in World War II. They don't want to fight with the English, and they don't want to fight against the English. They want to defend themselves, and they feel that, you know, if we get involved in this war, we're not going to be able to defend ourselves. We could be invaded by either entity. There was a lot of pro-German mentality in Ireland because the Germans had sold them arms during their war for independence against England. And of course, there's the inevitable bitterness against England, and very well deserved. The more research I did, holy cow. Yes, that's why things were still blowing up in the 1980s and 90s. Understandable. But this woman had an uncle who was an Irish Catholic who had joined the British effort during World War II and was not welcomed home. And that was the seed that got me to think about what it would be like growing up in Ireland during World War II. The British are embargoing food, petrol, and fertilizer. There are food shortages because Ireland won't fight. Come fight with us and we'll lift the embargoes. And I understand Winston Churchill even at one point offered a complete, you will reunite the island. I'll give you Northern Ireland, give that back to Ireland, which was a big dream. And again, as we saw in the Troubles, if you're old enough, you remember the Troubles in the 70s, 80s, into the 90s of the Irish blowing up things in Northern Ireland, getting Northern Ireland back. He promised them that, and they still wouldn't fight for him. So my favorite little anecdotes of the story is that, you know, there's a lot of suffering. Kids are getting rickets because there isn't enough good food to eat. And finally, after a couple of years of the embargo, the Irish just shut off the Guinness. No more embargo anymore. Is it the food and the petrol? You know, and of course, nothing's rolling in. It's still wartime. But they got fertilizer. They got some white flour. They got the ability to move around Ireland a lot better. So the embargo's lifted in 1942, and I had to put that in. It's just too rich to leave out. But it's about two young men. Their father is accused of being IRA, and the Irish government arrested IRA people then. Not quite like the Japanese internment in America, but you're IRA, you're going to jail, no trial, no hearing, nothing. You're just going, and we'll let you out when the war's over. So you can't do any harm here now. Well, they're left without their dad. And they have their mother and older sister are just devastated, angry, ready to go blow things up. And these two boys find, on their way home one evening, they find a British airman, but he happens to be an American. So the history here is so deep and rich. There were actually Americans who sneaked out of, because of the Neutrality Act in America, it was illegal for American men to join in the war effort And there were men who sneaked over the border into Canada and joined the RAF and fought for England before Pearl Harbor. And so I plunked down one of those characters. And now we've got this mom and the sister angry at home. And we've got this, okay, what are we going to do with this American guy who's fighting for the British? And everybody around here is mad at the British. And people at home are mad at the British because they're blaming the British for our dad being arrested. What are we going to do with this wounded airman? And they think of back over there is Mary the recluse weaver who makes yarn and wool for the town in for the businesses and for people who want to make their clothing. And she's kind of a recluse. Maybe she'll help us out. And so they go and ask her and they find out that she's harboring two Jewish children because Jewish refugees were not welcomed into Ireland either then. And so then we have this whole conflict of how is this all going to play out in the community? Who's Mary? You know, is there any connection between her and the family, and why is she a recluse? What's different about her? So that's basically the setup, and it was a lot of fun. I'm still fascinated with the history of Ireland. It's not a happy history, and that was difficult for me because I wasn't sure when I want to write about a book about Ireland. Let's see. Well, I don't want to go ancient. I don't want to go back to the Druids, and I don't want to do the War for Independence, and I don't want to do the Troubles because there's no good side there. Everybody's killing everybody. It's just like, so this World War II time, that's really interesting. And so I was able to do all this research and eventually it all came together and the broken harp, the harp is the national symbol. And it's, you know, it's this very Irish thing. It's not very big. It's not this far from the floor. It's about that big. But the 12-string harp, that was pervasive throughout Ireland until the British invaded. And then it became illegal to have a harp. And so now it is it's the symbol. It's on a lot of their currency. And the harp is broken because of the division that goes on. And I think, I hope that kids and anybody reading it, I get a lot of good, great feedback from adults who are reading this. I hope they can really enjoy the book because it's a little reminiscent of what we're living through now. America's very divided. People are on this side, people are on that side. Is there a third way, which is kind of what the kids are looking for? Like, we don't necessarily, we would love the Germans to come because they'll set dad free. We can have dad back. We can go back to the way things were, not realizing, of course, that would, you know, once you have an event in life, there is before and there is after, and there's no going back. The old is gone. That's really what they're going to have to deal with, all this new change.
That's quite something. Can you tell us about the characters Brian and Patrick?
Yeah, Brian is the narrator. He's the younger brother. Patrick is 16 years old. And he's 14. Patrick's 12. I don't know where I got 16 is the sister. So we have mom and dad. We have Nan, the sister, who's 16. She graduated from school 2 years ago. She keeps bees. That's her employment. And she is perhaps enamored with one of the locals who is influenced by the Irish independence, the Irish Republican way of thinking. Patrick is the older, wiser brother. And the other thing I love about this book is that it teaches kids how much faster people had to grow up back then. You went to seventh grade and then Patrick's at age 14. Patrick is in his last year of school and the next year he'll be looking for employment, trying to figure out what to do and setting himself up for being able to acquire a wife and build a family and sustain them through employment, through work, which is very difficult in Ireland because of the way the British and everything, it's very difficult back then, lots of unemployment. And that, of course, has been the history, even through the Troubles. things improved in Ireland and things settled down, once tourism became a great big thing, and it was very easy to get a job, and the economy improved. So those two characters, Nan is a very sassy, strong-headed, red-headed Irish lass. And Mom is very bitter at Dad having been taken away. He is the hope, the heart of the house. He's gone. She's lost her hope. And she spends a great deal of the book trying to get over that anger, trying to live it out. Dad is the keystone. And Dad's occupation is drywall building. And if you've read much about Ireland or been there, you've seen the stone walls and the traditional stone walls put together by shaping the stones to fit together with no mortar. And they stand for hundreds of years. So I carried that metaphor through with each person in the family representing a stone, helping to hold the other members of the family in place. Dad is the keystone. So you imagine, and it's interesting that when I found out this was a real thing, the archways that they built, no mortar. You are trusting gravity to hold all those stones in place when you walk under that archway. And so Dad is the keystone, and the family's crumbling without the keystone. So they carry the metaphor through. Dad tells them, don't fight, build. That there are two ways to fight. One is fighting, and the other is building. And they have to decide what they're going to do. Their internal conflict, will we join the fight against the British and against everything going on around us? Or are we going to build something instead? So the book's an invitation to be a builder.
There's another character, Mary. She's a very compelling and mysterious figure. How did you develop her character, and what does she represent in the story?
I have several characters, not several, but I have a few characters in there that I didn't know who they were for a while. So Mary was one of those. And honestly, and it's funny, my sixth graders were reading this book every Friday. I would bring in two chapters. And when I get to the chapter where I'm not going to tell you, make everybody buy the book. I'm not going to tell you who Mary is, but she is this mysterious character. She's a weaver. She is the community calls her the Banshee. She's got long white and red hair, and she wears black dresses, and her animals go all over the place because she doesn't have a stone wall to keep them in. And she's chasing her animals across her cow, her sheep, many sheep. She harvests their wool and turns it into yarn and to fabric. And so she's chasing her animals all over the place, and people stay away from her. They won't look her in the eye. You look the Banshee in the eye, bad things could happen. And Patrick has spent some time with Mary and knew who Mary really was, at least partly, and got to know her and realized, the whole Banshee thing is just, folklore and come on. And so, but Brian's a little bit more susceptible to the superstitions. He's a little bit more afraid of her. And then of course, when they find out that she's harboring these children and she takes in the pilot, they feel very obligated to come and help her with her animals and all the things that she needs to do to keep the wool production going, to keep her income coming in, and take care of three other people that she's responsible for. So they get on board with that. And when the sixth graders here realized who she really was, there were audible responses across the classroom of, oh! So, okay, I think I hit something there. But yeah, that's one of the big secrets. There's also another mysterious character, the man in black, who remains unnamed throughout. I leave that to the reader to decide who he is. And it took me a while. I had this kind of picture of, where I was going to do the Catholic Protestant thing a little bit. And that's actually more of an undertone. The whole time I was growing up, and the Troubles were on the evening news with Walter Cronkite every night, or it seemed like that, but pretty frequently. And, people would say, oh, they're arguing about religion. No, they're not. Never. They are never having conversations about baptism, about the meaning of communion. That's never been part of the conversation. The Catholics or the Irish who believed in an independent Ireland, and the Protestants tended to be supporting the British. And it was as simple as that. The British came in, they brought in Protestantism, they took away the harp, they tried to shut down the Catholic Church, they dispossessed the Irish of their property. And I will say that one of my characters is a Protestant, and most of them are Catholic, because it's a reality of what Ireland was. And I thought of, you know, and I didn't want it to be all the good characters or this and all the bad characters. No. So everybody's well represented, and the history of the place is well represented, and bad things that people on both sides have done, I think, has a fair representation. And so I tried to, you know, I feel as a descendant of Irish and understanding the injustices that happened, I feel a whole lot of sympathy and empathy for the Irish cause, but I couldn't make them the good guys because there's too much destroying and fighting and not enough building. And so I wanted it to have a positive thing. I wanted it not to be, and again, look at the divisions in America today. I didn't want it to feel partisan. I wanted it to feel Christ. That's we're going to follow Christ. That's going to be our watchword, our lighthouse, our, you know, light in the darkness to get us on the right path. That's the answer, not this side or that side or the German side. not the Nazi side.
What do you want for readers to walk away from this book?
Deciding to be a builder. And I didn't have quite that vision until Charlie Kirk was killed. Wow. And when that happened, and I didn't pay that much attention to who Charlie Kirk was. You know, this guy that if I watch this on YouTube, I'm probably going to walk away angry at something somebody said. And, you know, there's enough of that in my life. I'm not going to. So I didn't watch a whole lot of Charlie Kirk. But once that happened, and then I thought, well, I watched more and I listened to his answers and I watched him be accepting of everybody who disagreed with him. And, you know, we're just going to talk and we're not going to argue or fight and hey, whatever. And I thought, that's what he was doing. He was inviting us to be builders. And he was telling us, get married, have children, be productive, and figure out where you belong in this world and live this, follow this Christian life. And he started out, as I understand, being a whole lot more political, and he ended up being a whole lot more Christian and inviting young men, especially, but not exclusively, to come in and follow Christ and be builders. And so that helped shape from September when he was killed to December when I finished writing. It really turned the focus of the book into this laser view of what's it look in asking the question that Brian is asking in the first sentence, what's it mean to be a man? That these people came into my house, carted my dad off, and they were teaching me how to be a man. Not necessarily, the lesson wasn't ended that day, it was begun. And he spends the rest of the book trying to decide what kind of man he's going to be. Does he see that in his father? Does he see that in other men around? Does he see that in the teacher who loves the Germans and can't wait for the Germans to get here? Where is he looking to see where he can be a man? And he and Patrick have to make that decision together.
So this third book, obviously you wrote two other previous book, Restoring the Shattered and the Pondering Hollow. How would you place this book, The Broken Harp, with the three, like, what theme does it come in with these three books?
Restoring the Shattered is an explanation for Catholics about what evangelicals really believe, and an explanation to evangelicals about what Catholics really believe.
Right.
So the whole Catholic Protestant thing, there's so much misrepresentation that happens in both communities about both traditions. And that for the most part, we can all, you know, say the Apostles' Creed and there we are together. And so that there are elements of that there too. Wandering Swallow is about China, and my affection and interest in China, my passion for China, came when I was a kid. My mother's telling me to eat because there's a famine and a starving child in China would love to have what you don't want to eat. And I would have been happy to give it to them. I remember that. I remember President Nixon went to China in 1972, and there was this big passion about China across America, and curiosity. It was a closed country. And then 1989 happened, which was Tiananmen Square. You might also recall that Berlin Wall came down. 1989 was big. And when Hu Yobang died in 1989 in China, he had been a part of the government who advocated for reform. And he was ousted. And when he died, people converged on Beijing. And so I was able, as a news reporter, to meet one of the survivors of Tiananmen Square. And so a lot of what he told me is in Wandering Swallow. That book is about freedom. And that is about a girl finding out that there is such a thing, because in North Korea, she's escaping from North Korea through China, how the story is about China, but she's escaping from the famine in North Korea through China to get to Hong Kong, which the British still controlled in 1997. So they have to get out before that. Otherwise, they're really going to have a hard time getting pizza, a lot harder to get out of China today, because mainland China is controlling Hong Kong. So she's got to get out in that period of time, but she's finding out there is this thing called freedom. There are these things in life that you decide, which is not a thing in North Korea. You don't decide what to wear. You don't decide how you're going to get your hair cut. You don't decide what to eat, because if it's food, you eat it. And you're glad you've got it. You don't make choices. There, can you imagine growing up and never making a choice? And never having to I don't have to decide what I'm going to wear. I don't have to decide what I'm going to think. I don't even have to say to the hairdresser, you know what, if you cut it a little bit this way, no decisions to make. She has to learn how to make decisions. But what she learns most of all is that there's only one kind of freedom. And it really doesn't even matter if you're in North Korea or if you're in China or if you're in America, the only freedom that you can ever have is in Christ. That is the main message of that book.
Now you have done 3 books, Nancy. What's next for you as a writer? Do you have that 4th one coming up, or what's next for you?
Well, I have 2 in the works. Oh, cool. One is one I'm working on with my nephew, and we've kind of taken a break recently. Obviously, I'm launching this and some things going on in our family. We had a death in our family, and so we're taking a little break here. But he's doing paintings of sites in Ireland, and I wrote a picture book. The text of a picture book that is talking about the virtues. And we're going to have the 7 cardinal virtues and the theological virtues. And I think I threw 1 or 2 extras in there to get us to a certain number. And it's a little counting book, but it's going to have these Irish things in. And it's based to a small degree on the characters in this book, because the characters one is representing prudence, one is representing temperance, one is representing this character, that character, dad representing hope, mom representing love. And so that's coming. I'm not really sure when, but the other one is the whole foundation for Malika Mathers. And I had written this other book. And when the grandchildren would come over, and they're mostly grown now, there's one who was part of this process who's graduating from high school this year, and the other ones were older. And I used to watch them after school or during the summer sometimes in the days. And when they would come over, I'd say, okay, I'm writing a story, and it's about this boy with this math learning disability. And, you know, all these things happen to him. He goes to his grandfather's. And I pitched it for a few years. I couldn't find a publisher for it. And as I worked on the China book and the Irish book, I began to see the flaws in this book. But now instead of lying awake at night and thinking about Ireland, or waking up early in the morning and thinking of Ireland, and sometimes I still do, I'm thinking about this boy and what that story is going to look like. And I'm rearranging and rewriting and adding in. Maliko is Mila, Lily, and Marco, and the Mathers are other cousins, and the Lily of Maliko is the illustrator, in these two books. So I need to sit down with her again, see if she's on board for one more and get some illustrations there. And, you know, it's just been, it's really neat family experience of us deciding what should the inside of the book look like, what should the cover look like, you know, and, you know, go out to lunches at the gourmet buffet Chinese restaurant and sit and have chats about, you know, drawing this picture and that picture, what this character looks like, what that character looks like. And Lily did an amazing job. And one character she drew this time, and I thought, holy cow, she got angst in the eyes of this character that make him appear fearful, or it's hard to explain, like an anger fear sort of mixture in, and just in the eyes, not this character. This is our main character, Brian, but she drew a picture of the school teacher who's very harsh, but with this passion and love for Ireland in his heart. And he's a little bit more complex. There are other characters who are completely off the rails. And that is the logo that Lily drew, also that Lily crafted.
Beautiful.
For Malika Mathers Reads. And we have a website. It's got curriculum on it for Wandering Swallow, curriculum for The Broken Harp is yet to come. But these books are great for anybody to read, but they're great also for homeschoolers for read alouds. They're great for homeschoolers doing literature studies, history of Ireland, history of China and Korea. And, you know, of course, you know, there's a lot of Restoring the Shattered book is nonfiction, and the intended audience is adults, but older students could get some really good study about the history of the church in that book as well.
That's amazing, Nancy. What is the best way for people to get your book?
Well, the Amazon page you just showed, they're also all available on Barnes & Noble and any bookseller. I think there's like 140 booksellers. I don't remember what the publisher told me. The whole bunch should be on all of them. But if you just Google it, you'll be able to find it. And there it is on Amazon.
Yes, and you can get the link right in this description below. The Broken Harp by Nancy Head, or aka Malika Mathers. This one is a big one, and I can't wait for the other books to come. Do you have any dates or potential by the end of the year or next year?
No, I would think 2027 would be. Right. I think it's going to be Counting on Jude. That's the working title at this moment. And he is a kid who can't count. He's got dyscalculia, and numbers don't make any sense to him. And the house burns down. They have to move in with their grandfather. They have to move across the country from Colorado to Pennsylvania. And there's this big surprise in there that mom, after 12 years, is expecting the miraculous sibling that was never expected. But Jude isn't going to be able to count the number of babies because So
Nancy E. Head, The Broken Harp. It's always great to have you on. What's the best way for people to reach you? Do you have an X account? Do you have an Instagram?
I am Nancy E. Head on X. It's hard not to say Twitter. I'm Nancy Elizabeth, but I'm also Malika Mathers Reads on Facebook too. And so any of those ways, there is a way to contact me through the website, MalikaMathersReads.com. So in my web, I also have a blog that's NancyEhead.com.
That's right. I've been to it.
Oh, thank you.
You know,
lots of ways.
Well, Nancy Ehead, is always a pleasure. You're welcome back anytime. Once you get your other books, please let us know. And any closing words before we go?
Well, there's the quote for tomorrow. I just saw this in an article today. David Seibel, I have my middle schoolers come in and write the quote down every day. Vision without action is a daydream, while action without vision is a nightmare.
Wow. Beautiful.
David Seibel.
There's
your quote for the day.
There you have it. Quote of the day. Nancy, I appreciate you coming on to the Sleon Productions podcast.
Thank you. God bless.